Some men do say King Arthur is not dead, but by the will of our Lord Jesu sleeps, yet to awake, deathless, and reassure us. And therefore is it, that grave where he is laid, this legend hath, that still his kingdom keeps.
Gather round all your hunks of Camelot, cuz it's your boys in the back to rock the spot. The podcast about Merlin season 3. And on the mics tonight, yo, Chris and Jeremy. And they're here to break down every episode. So leave those 5 stars and click that download. Enjoy the show, whether you're chillin' or working. So let's jump into season 3 of Merlin, cuz still his kingdom keeps. Still his kingdom keeps. Still his kingdom keeps. Excalibur in the streets and magic in the sheets, huh?
I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm a little guy living in a little box.
And this is Still His Kingdom Keeps, a creepy but necessary podcast where Chris and I are covering every single episode of the TV show Merlin, even the bad ones. Chris, it's episode 35. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've had some standout episodes of Merlin that we didn't particularly care for, but like still like went hard, like with the troll stuff and the farting and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think this is our first actual like bad by every measure episode of Merlin.
Yeah, it doesn't do enough to establish what it wants to establish, and then just has like a really dramatic ending. I wasn't a fan. I guess it's compared to like really bad Supernatural episodes, this wasn't like the worst thing I've ever seen, but it was probably the worst episode of Merlin so far.
It's easily the worst episode of Merlin. Also, IMDb confirms that it is the worst rated episode of Merlin. I went and sorted by user votes, and this was the one with the least. Before we get into it, I guess thank you to the patrons, patreon.com/monster of the week. We see you guys continuing to support us. We very much appreciate it. Jump on the train if you want cool stuff. But yeah, this episode was just it's just like a nothing episode. Like even the stuff that was trying to be a little funny, like the Arthur and Merlin stuff, just felt like flimsy to me in a way that doesn't normally. Like, and maybe that was just the rest of the episode bringing it down, or maybe it's just because it's fucking Gaius centered. And I have learned during this podcast that I don't give a fuck about this dude anymore. He could die tomorrow, yeah. It'd be fine.
Yeah, really troubling realization to come to the conclusion that Gaius is sort of the worst. I always loved the grandfatherly vibe that he gave off, the relationship, how he really cares about Merlin, but those are his saving graces and there's not much else going on.
And some of his worst behavior is on display here. Why don't you catch us up? What's been happening with Merlin so far?
All right, last time on Merlin, Arthur ventured on a quest to the perilous lands in hopes of proving himself worthy of being king. But when Morgoth and Morgana conspire to drain him of his strength and leave him for dead, it's up to Merlin and Gawain to come to the prince's aid. Together, they battled wyverns and collected Arthur's prize, victorious in their quest, but not before Merlin received a mysterious gift from the ancient Fisher King and more hints about the destiny of Albion.
I'm gonna have to cut out a yawn there. Whoops.
Wow, really bored you with that one. I thought I'd maybe taken your breath away.
I think maybe it was because we've just recorded on the episode yesterday and I was like, yeah, I know all of this. We are covering Merlin season 3 episode 9, Love in the Time of Dragons. This was written by Jake Mishi, directed by Alice Troughton. This aired almost exactly 12 years ago on November 6, 2010.
Wow.
When an old flame of Gaius's arrives at Camelot, Merlin is pleased to see a different side to his curmudgeonly mentor. Wrong. However, after discovering he is under the influence of a manticore, a creature from the old religion, Merlin has no choice but to tell his old friend of Alice's evil intentions. Blinded by love, the old physician... They just keep calling everybody old. Yeah. Blinded by love, the old physician refuses to believe Merlin's story, and the two friends fall out. I knew this was going to be... I had a warning when I was creating my notes for this episode, because I copied the cast at the very top of the notes page, so I can kind of remember actors' names. And I did not see Morgana or Gwyn, and I was like, uh-oh.
This is a portent of danger.
We start the episode with a woman driving a cart into Camelot, smiling and humming. She makes her way to an empty house that looks suspiciously like Gwyn's house, and unpacks a chest And she opens the chest. It's empty. She begins chanting some magic to it. And out pops a very terrible CGI manticore. This is a little bitty creature with like a baby face, a scorpion tail, some weird like extended gills. It's got a lion's body, sharp teeth. It's just super gross. It's a gross thing.
It's a lot to handle. I've, especially with cold opens, I've tried to change the way that I take notes about them because I so often would do a really detailed note-taking for a scene that ends up not really mattering a lot. There's like one key detail you need to take away. So for this one, I said, I'm going to watch the whole thing, and then I'm going to write down what... What I ended up writing down was, woman comes to town with a magic box with a magic creature. That's it.
Perfect. I love it.
That's all I wrote. But this guy is a freaky little guy, and Merlin has had a number of freaky little guys.
this is...
And they always manage to keep that freaky factor up there. Whoever's like does like the art design for these CGI creatures, they're a little nasty. That's all I'm saying.
They're a little nasty. This is done by, I think, the company that did Sméagol, the guy.
Lord of the Rings?
Well, what's the name of the creature? Sméagol.
Gollum?
Gollum. Jesus Christ. Yeah, this
Sméagol is his given name.
Is his given name. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But yeah, this was like apparently one of the... I'm sorry. This was... I read this in the behind the scenes thing on the Wikipedia page, and I thought it was like, oh, these were the people that did it. It was like, oh, no, this is just a technique that was created by the Lord of the Rings thing. It's actually like motion captured, which it probably, I think, serves to make it a little bit weirder than normal. I will say, actually, the design of the face is so fucking gross and bad that I kind of like it. It's just anytime it interacts with humans at all, like the whole thing falls apart for me. So
yeah. It's a freaky guy. And,
it's a freaky little dude.
I think it's the author's self-insert OC to this episode.
Yes, absolutely. We go over to the throne room where Uther is telling Gaius that he is concerned that there is somebody offering miracle cures in the outlying villages. There's a number of like hopeless cases where people have made full recoveries, and Uther is not about believing that people just get healthy when they get sick. So he's like, we got to go check this shit out.
That's like that fundamental problem here is like, no, these people
are
too healthy.
Yeah,
and I won't stand for that.
These peasants should not be recovering this quickly. We do not give them enough food to be able to do that, as he crunches on a giant ham. He tells Gaius that
can't be having miracles.
Tells Gaius, hey, the innkeeper in the local tavern, this just happened to him. He made a full recovery. Gaius is like, that's impossible. I checked him out myself. So it's off to go check it out. We have a very brief thing here where Merlin is kind of complains about Uther being a hypocrite, that he doesn't want anybody benefiting from magic unless it's his family. And I was like, when I was watching this, I was like, oh, yeah, that seems like a cool angle for this episode. And no, that did not happen.
And they don't do it, dude. They can never like, they'll sometimes like make like a little bit of a criticism, but they're not ever able to like
go all the way
through that. And I don't need the show Merlin to do that, but in 2022 it would be nice to see some of that. But I guess in 2010 that's not really where the show was at.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not a goal for the show or anything like that. It's just interesting that they touch on it just enough to keep me like salivating for it. We meet the innkeeper, Avoric, who is totally fine. He originally says like, Gaius, it's all thanks to you. And Gaius is like, no, tell me the truth. I'm not going to turn you in. He's like, oh yeah, my wife totally met some like random chick in an alley, got a bunch of powder, and I snorted it, and I felt great. This rules. I am up and at them.
He's like, oh, I think I know what that is. Okay, so it's not magic.
So you guys are just on cocaine. I think Uther's not going to have a problem with that. Uther's probably okay with giving cocaine to the masses.
Yeah, he's fine with that. He's like, oh, I don't care. Let them get it. He's weirdly chill about like drug use. Like, his marijuana's always been legal in Camelot, but if he for one second thinks that there's any sort of magic involved, you know.
So are you saying execution. That Camelot is like the medieval Denver, Colorado? Like, it just weed and psychedelic mushrooms.
Even harder though, because like... you can do coke. You can go all in, you know. But no. If you trip, if you take any kind of mushrooms, that's death. That's execution. Acid execution. But anything that really gets you jazzed up or puts you to sleep, like milk with a poppy, that's legal.
That's totally legal.
You know,
yeah,
Morgana's like sipping scissor in court.
Do you think like this?
That's fine.
Do you think it's like old people travel to Camelot just for access to poppy? Like, they leave the other kingdoms and are like, yeah.
You think Senrid has legalized poppy? No.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. He's legalized putting old people to work, though, which is the opposite of what you all. Like, these people just want to get sloppy on the poppy. They do not want to be working, so.
Yeah, dude, if I'm 65, let me get sloppy on the poppy. I don't want to have to still be slaving away, you know what I mean?
Oh, God, I want that when I'm 45.
Yeah, I want that right now, dude.
I'm just desperate. Let me get sloppy on the poppy right now. I have a friend who is going through some medical stuff, and they gave them, the doctors gave them morphine, like actual morphine.
Yeah.
And my friend was like, if I had ready access to that, I would not be here. Like, he told me, I was watching Andor and just tripping my ass off and just having the best time. Like, I wanted more of that shit. And, like, to the point where I asked for it, and they were like, no, you can't have it anymore. You're enjoying it too much.
As soon as you're asking for it, then they go,
Sorry, cutting off. We're turning this back to the Clone Wars, so you won't have as much of a good time. Yeah. Gaius gets this dude to show him what he's taken, and it's just a vial of glowing dust. He then goes back to Uther and kind of weirdly lies and says, no, this was just herbs. And Uther's like, are you sure? Like, it really sounds like it's magic. And Gaius is like, nah, bruh, I just suck at my job. It's just, I was bad medicine and they found a better doctor.
I mean, he's literally about to put himself out of work, because I think normally Uther would be like, you must bring this physician to me. Like, we already did this plot line. Like, when the alchemist was able to cure Morgana and Gaius wasn't, we did this storyline. So I just feel like history would repeat itself. And he'd be like, all right, we got to find this person. We have to find whoever's responsible so I can get their help with my shoulder wound. Why am I still taking daily doses of your weird, gross potion?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody could just give me something that fixes it.
Maybe somebody would give me some poppy finally. I think when I was, because I binged this show a lot back in the quarantine days of the Discord when everybody was binging this a lot kind of together. There were a couple of times where, like, I had nothing going on during the day and I just had this on that I just kind of maybe closed my eyes for a little while. I think it was definitely during this episode, because several times in this episode I was like, oh, so they're going to go for, like, there's a better physician for Uther line. Like, I kept guessing stuff that was going to happen. I don't have any memory of this whatsoever. So, eventually Uther is convinced and he lets it go. Merlin and Gaius go back to the lab, and Gaius is preparing a meal of giant ham. He's just got a big ass ham that's on the table.
One huge ham. Yeah, one huge ham.
And Merlin is like, I'm so happy that you hit it. Like, this magic obviously helps people.
I'm so happy that you found one huge ham for me. Also that you didn't tell him about the magic.
This ham is going to be so dope. And Gaius is like, no, it's not magic. And Merlin's like, yeah, but what about the glowing fairy dust and the giant magic crystal totem? And Gaius is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Go to bed. I'm like, what?
He's like, please. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. Right before I go to bed, let me just turn the topic of conversation back to one huge ham. I was wondering if I could get some of that one huge ham, please.
Yeah, I would just like one huge ham. Just one little bit of ham.
Gaius, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I just really, really quick, just want to know, what's the status on that one huge ham? Is that for me?
Is that
for Merlin?
Is that a ham for everybody?
Was that sort of like a solo one huge ham thing, or is this like a... I'm going to go to bed. Okay. And then, yeah, so he completely dismisses Merlin's questions, which, you know Merlin going to be snooping. And that night, sure enough, Merlin wakes up to go steal some of that one huge ham, and he catches Gaius sneaking out. And what does Merlin do? He snoops on after him.
And he puts that ham in his pocket, and he goes sneaking.
He puts that whole ham in his pocket, and then he trucks on out.
He's taking big slobber and bites
of this thing.
What is even the point of having a magical, like, bottomless, you know, bag? Because you're a sorcerer. I'm sure Merlin has like a bottomless bag. If you can't just pull a ham out of that bad boy at any time.
That's what big magical bags are for.
It's for
ham. We've seen magical bags in a lot of different properties, a lot of different fantasy series. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen someone pull a big, huge ham out of one. And that's like whenever, like, I ask people on Twitter, if you had a magical bag and you could pull one object out of it, like, at any time, at will, what would it be? And, like,
ham.
You look at my replies on my Twitter, localbones@twitter.com. Mm-hmm. You look at any reply, everybody's going to be saying one huge ham. Some people, if they're vegan, might say, like, one huge loaf of vegan bread. I couldn't think of a single thing.
It would be one impossible ham, right? Like the impossible like
one,
burger.
Oh, yeah, one impossible one ham impossible. Still tastes like it. But it's, you know, it's better for you or something.
Yeah. Those are what most of the replies beans. Are.
Or, like, occasionally, like, if you were close to, like, like Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. Like some people get like a little like they get like that kind of like Thanksgiving head rush, and everybody's like one huge turkey, and I'm like, I know you don't mean that. I'll come back in a week and we'll see how you feel about that. But I've asked this question a lot, and everybody's always saying, "When you jam, would you jam?" So it's weird that like other series aren't doing this.
So Merlin, as he watches Gaius knock on this door, he brings out the ham and starts to nibble. As he watches the woman from the cold open open the door, and they give each other a big hug, and she gives him a smooch on the cheek. And the camera cuts back to Merlin, and he is just like cocking his head, and like you could just tell Merlin
cannot
just
believe this. Well, he's just sucking on that huge ham.
I mean, he's just like. But he cannot wait to get to Gwyn and Morgana and report on this new drama, right? Like,
that's
so excited.
Like, he's knocking on Morgana's door that night. He's like, listen, sis, I know we're not really on speaking terms right now.
I know we are mortal
enemies.
You've
got to hear this.
You've got to hear this. You and I have been talking shit about Gaius for a long time, and we have got to talk about his new girlfriend. Excuse me? Girlfriend?
Nothing will get enemies to put aside their differences faster than a mutual hatred for something else, right?
Or but, hot goss.
The enemy of my
or
enemy
that hot
is my
goss,
friend.
Man. You gotta
That's
have
what I'm
hot
saying.
Goss.
That's what I'm saying. Gossip will bring people together.
He has to leave. Merlin, he's standing outside. Which
the guards come walking down, so Merlin has to run away.
It's illegal to have ham in public after 8 p.m. Is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, especially if it's one huge ham. I get that Merlin, maybe there's a curfew or something. That makes sense for Camelot. But I just feel like Merlin just runs out of it. Like, he's so used to running and hiding from the guards.
Yeah,
as soon as he sees them, he's like, I gotta split.
Yeah. Gaius and Alice spend a little time talking. Alice is the name of this woman. They've been apart for 20 years. They have a lot of history together. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm not going to, like, there's a lot of time in this episode spent between, like, outlining all of the details between Gaius and Alice, and I don't really fucking care. I'm 99.9000% confident she doesn't show up in the rest of the series. I don't really care about her at all. So they spend a lot of time talking and, like, oh, you ran away from Camelot because you use magic and it's not safe for you here. And she's like, no, but I love you. And all of that stuff. Eventually, he leaves and the Manticore pops out. And the Manticore is like, you got to fuck that dude up. And she's like, no, I love him. And she's like, no, but you're going to do it. And her eyes turn black and he has to do it anyway. So she is under the influence of the nasty little creepy guy.
Yeah, her eyes are going demon black. She's under the control of the sick, nasty freak, and now we know what's up here. What's going on? Did the Manticore make her come back to Camelot to kill Uther? Right, like that's the plot, right? But what does the Manticore have against Uther?
He doesn't like magic. Like,
I mean, yeah, but then like, don't go to Camelot. You're a Manticore. You live in a strange little box. Like, what are you even doing here?
I don't know, man. There was probably like a huge civilization of Manticores that didn't go out and be fucking weird little guys that lived on like Arthur's training ground before Uther came along, right? Like,
I know, but the
Manticore, they tell in the episode that Manticore has been around for 1,000 years, so I'm just guessing that the Camelot castle would displace the Manticore
in this
home.
Realm.
I know, but
they're weakened when they get stuck in this realm.
They had an enormous castle box that was their portal.
Oh, and duh, when they, dude. And you know they, who they, has, you know what Uther has access to, like an endless access supply of that nobody else has, is one huge ham.
It's Manticores. Got a lot of Manticores love ham.
That's why they keep showing us with Merlin and Gaius eating the ham, because that's what the Manticore, I think it says it in the book. Yeah, it does. You're right. Mm-hmm. It does say later it's, on.
Yep. You looked ahead a little bit. I'm skimming the episode right now. And Mon Moth is telling Mon Moth.
Yeah, Mon Mothma. Jeffrey of Mon Moth. He says, Manticores, they exist
on a
diet of purely one huge hams.
Purely cured. Purely.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What are we doing? Gaius goes home. He looks at some love letters.
I really hope that people think the ham bit is funny because I'm laughing a lot.
I'm laughing
at this point.
The next day, Merlin is like, hey, I saw you leave and I saw you make out with that chick. And Gaius is like, yeah, of course I was making out with her. She used to be my fiance until Uther tried to kill her. Like, excuse me?
Yeah, dude, Merlin's like, what happened? And he's like, Merlin, what the fuck do you
what
think,
do you think happened?
Happened?
She used fucking magic, and it's the same thing that has happened to everything in my life. Uther tried to kill her. Yeah. yeah, this is kind of horrifying that when Uther's like great purge happened, he wrote down a list of people that he suspected of having magic, which like nowadays I feel like you would just like look at a Twitter list or something and be like, yeah, that's a witch. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just gonna, yeah. that looks like a witch. Yeah. And then as the court physician, Gaius had access to that list and was able to take Alice's name off of it, thus saving her, allowed her to escape, but he stayed behind because I don't know, whatever. And the next scene, you guys are going to think we're making this up, and we're not, and this is really funny. Gaius brings the ham to Alice. Yeah. This is not a bit anymore. He actually brings the ham to Alice, and she's like, you're such a nice and considerate person.
Meanwhile, like Merlin like wakes up, he comes out into the hall in the lab, and he sees the table where, like, there's just like a big wet mark where one huge ham once was, and he's like, Gaius, where's my ham?
I thought that was the way that you were paying me from now on. I don't understand. They do this thing where she's like, do you remember how to talk about crystals? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I remember everything. And she's like, well, let's not talk about the bad times. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, please end me over this episode. We jump over to Arthur, and we are introduced to our kind of running comedy gag throughout this, which is Arthur using Merlin to train. And in this situation, Merlin is holding up a ring above his head, and Arthur is charging at him on his horse with a joust, trying to get the ring on his lance. Terrifying and dangerous and hilarious.
Very, yeah, very scary.
At one point, he gives Merlin a shield and just starts beating up on him. Merlin just is collapsing on the ground, and Arthur is like, okay, fine. And it looks like Arthur's going to give up, but no, he just goes to get a giant fucking hammer to beat up on Merlin with. Yeah, it's very
just
funny.
When you think he's going to be nice. He pulls out a thing. I think that he would break Merlin's arm regardless of whether he blocked it or not. Like,
I think he wanted to.
War hammer to the shield, like, that's shattering a bone. I don't care.
See, this is the problem. Once you introduce the idea that the peasantry and that your servants can heal, then the royalty just wants to beat their asses all of the time. Like, he's like, yeah, well, if the innkeeper
there's,
can get back to work.
Unrest. There is some unrest in the royalty.
Yeah.
Because Uther has just found out peasants are being healed very efficiently, and we need to find a way to exploit this.
Yes.
What's the best way to exploit this? Cause them enough pain that it makes up for the fact that they're getting healed very quickly.
Absolutely. Take away their ham, introduce broken bones, solved. Problem solved. And Arthur's like, what problem were we solving? I don't understand. Like, don't worry, just go break Merlin's arm. And he's like, okay, I can do that.
If you
yes, sire. Merlin gets back to the lab where he finds Alice there. Gaius introduces them and then says,
introduces them, and he's like, hey, by the way, she's moving in.
She's moving in. Come on. And sleeping
your,
in,
like,
in
your roommate
room.
Like, starts dating a girl, and 2 days later he's like, by the way, I'm thinking she's gonna like stay here long term. Like, is that crazy, or like, is that like a good idea? Do you mind sleeping on the couch?
I think when I met Autumn, she basically just moved into my apartment for a while. Like, she had
how
a dorm.
How'd your roommates feel about that?
I don't know. I don't really care. Like, they brought people over all the time. Like, we didn't. Yeah, it was a weird house, man. Let me be honest with you. I don't know why.
Well, let me tell you, Merlin seems like he's actually pretty chill with it, all things considered. The ham thing aside, he seems pretty okay with this.
Unfortunately, that night, he's a little restless because he's sleeping instead of a pillow, he just has a box. And he's sleeping on the floor. And so
Bummer.
He wakes up and he starts hearing these weird noises from Alice's room. And I can only assume that he's like, they're getting freaky in there. I got to go spy on this and tell Morgana later. Because he's like, immediately, like, he's like, puts his eye to the door to try to figure out what's happening in there. And instead of her getting freaky with Gaius, he sees the manticore.
He sees her getting freaky with her box. And he sees what comes out of it. And it's not good.
Oh, I don't, Chris. I don't think you
what's
meant.
Up?
I don't
Jeremy,
think you
what's
meant.
What's up? What? No, yeah, she's.
She's not getting freaky.
Did I skip a scene? Isn't this the scene where she gets freaky with her box?
No! Yes. She gets some venom from this dumb little creature so that they could kill Uther with it, apparently.
I'm going to put myself a timeout. I'm just going to be quiet for a minute.
The next day, and this is when the episode really started to fall apart for me. The next day, Merlin is like, hey, Gaius, did Alice ever practice dark magic? And Gaius is like, well, yeah, it was the 60s. We all did a lot of weird stuff back then.
We all did dark magic. Don't be a fucking stiff
Why are you being a fucking rube, Merlin? Like, what are you doing?
We didn't all have dragon counselors back then, okay? We just were living and we were free, all right? We had to walk both ways uphill to school in our bare feet, okay?
We did a lot of stuff a lot of ways. That's all I'm going to say to you, okay? That's all I'm going to say to you, Merlin. We did a lot of stuff in a lot of ways. And he says, well, hey, that's weird because I saw her talking to a tiny little nasty freak of a creature last night. And Gaius, of course, is like, absolutely not. You're full of shit. Ham privileges off. You're done with the ham.
Ham privileges are revoked. Don't you dare describe her box like that. It's a very nice box. It's well kept. It's clean. And she tucks it under the bed at night.
I'm just gonna let you. I'm gonna let you roll with that one, dude. Keep going. Do you want to describe the outside of her box more?
It's ornate. It's okay. You know, you can tell that it's like it's seen some use, but it's still. Uh-huh. It's still. Again, it's not anything that you would turn away from. You know, you can see it's weathered. It's seen a lot of travel.
Experience box. It's an experience box.
It's a very experienced box, uh-huh. but it still does its job and it holds things where you know it needs to hold them.
Is it dusty? Is it dusty?
I wouldn't say that the box is dusty. Because again, it is.
You said it was well maintained. I didn't know. Okay, so it was well oiled.
Yeah.
You
don't hear a creak on that box when it opens up, you know what I'm saying?
That's a joke. It's not going to make sense until people hear the mistakes. We are way the fuck off track. We have got to finish this episode and just kill ourselves after this because Jesus Christ.
So I'm
going to
get some angry tweets being like, Chris, you're fucking disgusting. Listen, I'm talking about the box, the magical box that keeps the manticore in it, okay?
So he just tells Merlin to fuck off, basically. Merlin's like, no, homie, I can prove this. They go back to the lab. They open Alice's box. Of course, it's empty. And Gaius is like, you're a fucking idiot, and leaves. Merlin goes to the library to do some research, completely ignores Jeffrey, doesn't even respond to it, just his friendly hello, which makes me feel bad for Jeffrey the librarian, to be honest with you. We see Alice and Gaius like working together, and Gaius is fucking complaining about Merlin, which I don't think is fair. Don't complain about about the person that you've been ride or die with this entire time just until some you know new person just comes around.
Unbelievable. This is the classic case of, you know, your friend gets a girlfriend and they disappear from the face of the earth and you're left high and dry.
Ridiculous.
Which is a problem that you really only have when you're like 15, but
or
your classic case of that.
Merlin gets some help from Monmouth, from Joffrey. This is where we get our lore dump. The manticore is said to be 1,000 years old. The ancients were terribly afraid of it, but it's all made up. You'll never see one in real life.
Loves ham though.
And absolutely adores ham. Alice tells Gaius, like, oh, hey, like, why don't you let me finish Uther's remedy for you? I can knock that out for you. Starts putting the venom in it, which is when Merlin walks in and she drops it all over the floor and breaks it. And she's like, starts to clean it up. And Gaius is just like, don't worry, Merlin can clean that up for you. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Oh, sick.
Rude.
Oh, sick.
It's terrible.
Unbelievable. He doesn't get any ham and he's cleaning up after his friend's girlfriend now, dude. He's getting a raw deal.
It's bad, my man. It's terrible. I don't like this.
But that unwittingly saves Uther from being poisoned.
It's true.
Merlin,
he goes back to the
he
library.
He sneaks back into the library, right? Yeah. He does a little dream prank old Jeffrey.
Don't understand
here.
This.
Just I absolutely gobsmacked by this. Instead of just hiding and like laying low for a second and waiting for him to fall back asleep, he does some magic on some candles and is like, you're sleeping, and then presumably he just falls asleep or you know what, it's not important, but he goes back and he combs through the books and he finds more lore on the manticores, and then he seems like he actually finally has some sort of useful information. And then in the morning he goes to Gaius and he tries to tell Gaius everything that's going on. He's like, Gaius, you are blinded by your feelings. You are not seeing, something's up here. There's something going on with that box. I think there's a manticore here. But Gaius gets all hurt. He gets all defensive. He's not willing to have this dialogue with Merlin. Although, as we're going to see, it does seem like these words are getting to Gaius because I think Gaius kind of knows something's up. He's just blinded by his feelings, of course.
He tells Merlin, and this is, again, going back to just how infuriating the character of Gaius is written, and how much I know now realize I hate him. He tells, like, Gaius is like, no, that can't possibly be true, despite 35 episodes of the most dramatic, weirdest shit going on in this fucking world. Mm-hmm. And then he tells Merlin, I feel like you just don't want me to be happy, and that saddens me more than I can say. And I'm like, dial it back, mother-in-law.
Has Merlin ever just, like, made shit up?
Why are you being a dramatic, absent parent right now? What the fuck is this? Like, why are you being so fucking weird? And then he goes back to the lab and, like, tells Alice that he's all in a fight with Merlin, and she's like, oh, he's just jealous. And she convinces him to, like, go chill out while she prepares Uther's medication. We have another little break where Merlin is running around the training area with a giant target on his back so that Arthur can just throw spears at him. And he's so downtrodden that even Arthur recognizes something is up. And he tells Arthur, like, hey, me and Gaius kind of had this fight. And Arthur's like, oh, I fight with my dad all the time. The thing to do is just to, you know, not say anything and then let him come to his senses. And like, then he says, this will cheer you up. And he just punches him on the shoulder.
It's so funny when Arthur, like, tries to be a friend, but he's just got absolutely no idea, like,
absolutely
what he's
ridiculous
supposed to say or do. So this is the last time we see Arthur, I think. Oh no, he does.
No,
he comes back.
Yeah. Alice finishes all the preparations and then gives the medicine to Gaius, who is like, I don't know how I've ever lived without you, Alice. And I'm just rolling my fucking eyes. He rolls up to Uther, who is like, all right, daddy's poppy has arrived. Let's fucking
daddy's
party.
Daddy's poppy has arrived. I got a ham ready to go on the table. I'm going to sip this poppy and let's get into it.
Give it to me king style, Gaius. I want it king style tonight.
King style, and then let's crack into this ham, brother.
Let's get the ham warmed up, boys. Daddy's on the poppy.
He's just snapping his fingers for that ham to get warmed up. He takes it, and everything seems fine, and Gaius just leaves, and there's nothing suspicious here. No reason, no cause for alarm. And that's that. Great.
That's it. Yeah. No problems here. I've lost my place in my notes, so I'm coming back. I'm trying to find myself.
Meanwhile... I wrote a line about Merlin and Gaius are both feeling the absence of the other. I think they're both feeling that tension a little bit.
Gaius and Alice are, like, eating dinner, and there's just an empty plate beside them, which is very funny to me.
Right.
Merlin
that's
is just
right.
sitting
and
on
just
the
then
steps.
The bell tolls.
Yes. Arthur has found...
Which seems like a really dramatic way to alert, like, one specific guy that something is needed.
I feel like
Gaius is the person who's needed, because otherwise, like, everyone in Camelot's like, oh, something happened to the king? Like, what's up?
Yeah, what was that? Like, why did we alert everybody? Yeah. Did the time change again? Like, is that what this is? I don't know.
Can't somebody just go tell Gaius? It's whatever.
I gotta go change my foundry clocks again.
Damn it.
Arthur has found Uther passed out. Gaius arrives, seals off the quarters. When Uther opens his eyes, they're solid black, like we've seen with the manticore possessing or, you know, controlling Alice before. Gaius smells the medicine, which is, and it realizes that there's something off about it, but he tells Arthur that he doesn't know what happened. And Arthur's like, well, he's definitely fucking poisoned, my dude. Like, absolutely 100% poisoned. He fell on the ground and he has 100% black eyes. What do you think is going on? And Gaius is like, I don't know. Shouldn't jump to conclusions, though. Could be wrong. And then when
Gaius, pull yourself together.
And then when Merlin calls him out on this, he's just like, you need to be with Arthur. Get out of here. And I'm like, Gaius, can you calm the fuck down, please?
Mm-hmm. But as soon as he does that, he goes back to see Alice and he finally confronts her about everything. But as this dialogue is happening, Merlin has clearly given this information to Arthur, you know, his suspicions about Alice. So just as Gaius and Alice begin to talk about this, Arthur kicks the door in and he has Alice arrested. Merlin tells Gaius that he had no choice. It was either Gaius or Alice. And Gaius says, Merlin, this wasn't your choice to make. What do you mean, dude? What do you mean?
Yeah, it absolutely Merlin, was
Merlin
my choice.
Merlin does not know her. Yeah. Of course he's going to try and save you because you are blinded by your feelings and you're not able to see that she's actively trying to kill the king, which is, like, gonna get everybody killed. Now, if he had listened, it never would have gotten to this point. They could have probably figured out that she's being possessed by the manticore, and they could have destroyed it. But no,
No.
Guy says the ultimate gaslighter, and he even gaslit himself on this one.
It's so upsetting. I was just like you when Gaius is a friendly grandfather-ish, uncle friendly, you know, professor dude who's gonna be there for Merlin and teach him the ways of the world and provide like a place of sanity and a place of security, and like did he get stuff like this where he's just like, fuck you, I don't believe a word you say.
Unbelievable.
Notably in here, she tries to like yell out when she's busted, and her eyes turn black and she can't talk. So not only is the Manticore making her do this, but it's also preventing her from like actually telling people what's going on.
Yeah. And it's just like crazy, if we had brought this up earlier to her, the Manticore probably would have revealed itself and then we wouldn't be in this situation. But that's 100%. Just me. That's just one man's ham, you know what I'm saying?
We go back to Uther. We learn that Uther only has like a day left. Arthur goes to talk to Alice, who confesses everything but says she doesn't know a cure. And as she tries to like blame the Manticore, once again her eyes turn black. And this time Merlin notices it, and he's like, so he goes to Gaius, and Gaius is like, "Hey, don't worry. I know you had to do what you had to do, but you're still not getting any ham. The ham is mine."
No, you're still not getting even a single slice of this ham, brother.
And
just know that from the bottom of my heart, I will never give you
never in a million years. Now we know we have to kill the Manticore, and Gaius has an idea. We got to pull the Manticore out of his box. We got to kill it so that once it's dead, the magic power and the venom will then disappear, allowing Uther to live. And to get it out of its box and to keep it into this world where it can't survive, we'll have to destroy the box afterwards. Unfortunately, it's going to take a lot of magic to destroy the box. And for some reason, they're like, but Gaius has got to do it, not Merlin. I'm like, okay. Yeah, feels some, like y'all could have just let reason. Merlin do it. He's got a whole staff that like kills things. Like it kills fairies. Like, I don't know.
He's got to do it for character development.
Yeah, he's got to do it for emotional reasons. And that's what they do. So they approach the box. They open it. Merlin summons the nasty little creature out of the box. It attacks Merlin, leaving Gaius open to find his lost magical ability, eventually destroying the box. As soon as the box is destroyed, the creature lunges for Gaius, but dissolves on the way there. And sure enough, this fixed everything. Gaius kind of plays this off and like delivers an antidote to Uther. And Uther is like, well, man, this antidote has made me feel good. Let's execute that woman that tried to kill me, like, immediately.
Yeah, anyway.
It's the only time off. I think that I've ever agreed with Uther on an execution. Like, it's because, like, the way that all this looks like, you got to kill Alice. I'm sorry that, like, she loves Gaius, but you got to kill this chick. She tried to kill the king, and we caught her. Like, what are we going to do?
Sorry. That's that. And then Gaius goes to see her in prison. Man, they just let anybody into this prison. They just are not. They do the bare minimum keeping people inside here. I think it's just there's so much traffic in and out. You know what I mean? Like, they can't keep up with it all. Gaius goes to see her.
It's like the Mall of America down there. Just a huge food court. Like, a lot of shopping. There's some amusement rides. I mean, it's just there are a lot of entrances and exits. Just a lot of stuff going on.
And so there's going to be some theft, and that, and it is what it is. You can't have eyes everywhere. But she reveals that she tried to learn from the Manticore because she heard about it, found the box, thought that it was something that she could harness its power for good. But of course, it was too strong, and it overcame her. And this is how we got into the situation that we're in. For some reason, it had a vendetta against Uther and wanted his hams. And in the end, nobody gets a ham, and that's the biggest tragedy of all. But she's just like, well, anyway, I accept death, and
Dude, this
by
scene
the way,
is,
guys, I never stopped thinking about you.
This scene
he's
is
like, oh,
so
damn, I moved on. That's crazy.
Fucking long, man. This goes on forever. At one point, she's like, it feels better to die free than live as a slave. And I'm like, are you saying that? Because Gaius is a free man. We did that whole thing in season one.
Yeah,
like,
we
we've not
thing.
Forgotten about it. Like, I don't know what you're like. Are you saying it's better that you tried to kill the king and are being executed for it? Like, what is your point? Like, this just goes on fucking forever. And eventually it stops. And the next day, Merlin is meeting up with Gaius as alarm bells are ringing. And Gaius says, perhaps one of the prisoners escaped. How is that possible? And of course, Gaius just let the king-killing mistress just go.
Of course.
And Merlin says, like, oh, well, you could have gone with her. And he says, oh, I could have, but then who would have looked after you? And Merlin says, well, I can look after myself. And the guy is like, well, then I guess you don't. And this is real. You're going to think we're joking again. You think we're going to go back to the well on this, but we're not. This is in the show. You can fast forward to like 43 minutes and see this exact same thing. Gaius pulls out the ham and is like, well, then you don't get this anymore. It takes it away from Merlin. 100% real.
It all comes back to the ham. One
what
huge
the fuck
ham.
At least next week we're introduced to one of my favorite aspects of the show, one of my favorite gimmicks of the show, I guess. In the preview, I was very excited to see something I've been looking forward to for a long time. So this episode was boring and bad, Chris. I just didn't like anything about this at all. I don't know if you could tell by the way that we barely talked about it, anything that happened in it. Yeah. Like,
not my fave. Not my fave. Hardly any Arthur. No Gwen. No Morgana. What are we even doing here? I mean, when you're just watching it passively, whatever. It's fine, right? But then when you get to stop and take notes about it, the only thing that's making it out of this episode is that damn ham.
That's it. That's the only thing we'll remember about it. I don't know, man. This is just a fucking just a forgettable episode. Where's Morgana? Where's Gwen? Where's Arthur? Where's plot? Where's interesting
where's
things
plot?
Happening?
Where's plot?
Thank God this chick literally never shows up again. I'm so excited about that. We never have to worry about it.
Yeah. No sweat.
Any last thoughts?
I'm ready to eat some ham myself now.
Okay.
But I'm happy to have this episode in the rearview mirror.
We got Thanksgiving's coming up, dude. I mean, by the time people are hearing this, it's probably already Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving's coming up. So do you guys do ham for Thanksgiving? Like, we do turkey and ham. We do both.
We do turkey. I think on occasion there's been a side ham. Mm-hmm. But it's usually focused on the turkey.
Yeah. Interesting. I like the turkey, but I am all about that ham.
You're
no
all
trouble.
About the ham.
All about the ham.
Yeah,
no
I think
trouble.
I feel like I sense that about you.
Do I feel like a ham guy coming off the mic? I mean, we've never met each other in person, so you don't know what I smell like, but I don't know if you know that ham guy's got a real good pork sweat smell happening, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Ham guys have a different aura.
Yeah. And it's not so much of an aura as it's just a funk. thank you for
some
supporting
say funk,
us.
Some say aura. It's, you know.
We love you. Patreon.com/Monster of the Week. Ratings, reviews, talk to us on Twitter. We'll be back next week with hopefully a better episode.
Bye. Hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
Buonasera. Buonasera.
You talking that Mario language to me, mister?
Arrivederci, Chris.
Oh. To my American ears, that sounds pretty good, friend.
Tu mangia il pane?
That didn't sound as good as your arrivederci.
Okay, well, that means you eat the bread, so I just want you to know what's
I
happening.
I do. I eat a lot of bread.
Tu mangi la manzo? That means you eat the beef.
I eat a lot of beef, too. I eat a lot of beef, and I eat a lot of bread. It seems to be my problem.
Mm-hmm. What's up, Christopher?
How's language learning going?
Have you ever done Duolingo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned a little bit of Japanese on it, which I'll never, ever be able to, like, read or actively put the time into. But I will say, it's a little helpful because I play a lot of JRPGs where the characters will just, like, say shit during battle and it's not translated into English and there's no subtitles. And now, some of those things, I can pick up on them a little bit. So, it was a bonus for my life. but I'll never actually learn Japanese.
The Duolingo has this, like, gamification thing where they put you in, like, a league.
Mm-hmm.
And then the top seven people in the league proceed to the next higher up league.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can place 1, 2, and 3 or whatever. And when I first started this, I was like, this shit sucks. I don't give a shit about this. And then today I got got into a rhythm. And a friend of the show, Nissa, and I are friends on Duolingo, and she sent me the double XP. So I started like rolling through some tests.
You're getting an XP boost.
I'm getting an XP boost. And then I looked at the league, and I'm at number one with 2,200 XP, and then the second person has 1,500. I'm just like, wow, I am the tryhard guy in the chat right now. So
you paid for Twitter Blue on.
I'm paying for Twitter Blue 100%. Yes, absolutely. I'm having my friends boost me so I can get the extra XPs.
Yeah. Yeah. Last night while we were recording, I saw at least two like fake game announcements. Or there was somebody made a fake Nintendo account on Twitter, and then somebody had made a fake Valve account and announced a new game under that. And since then, in the 24 hours since then, it has just been pure unhinged chaos.
Chaos, absolute chaos.
This new verification system. Dude, I was just looking at Reddit. I was like, should I make an account on here? Like, anything to get away from Twitter. But I don't know. I guess I'll stick it out and see what happens. And I don't want to go on Reddit. So
no, I'm not going to do Reddit. I'm going to be on Twitter until Twitter crashes and burns, like completely. Like until it's like all of my friends are gone. There's nobody worth following on Twitter anymore. And like nobody has figured out a replacement. Like, and at that point, like maybe that'll finally be the time where I'm like, you know what? Just going to give up on social media. But at the same time, like I do the podcast Twitter, right?
Right.
And that's fun.
That's the one wrinkle in all of it is like, well, but there's like, if it's just as an individual, I'm like, I've made my friends, like I'm good. Like yeah. I don't need to make any
new friends. Yeah, absolutely.
But when you are putting something out there that you want people to listen to, you do want to be able to engage with people. You do want to be able to have people find your show and interact with those people. So that does change things where it's like, in a sense, we do still want to have that layer of it. Because even now, if we stay with our current audience and nobody ever stopped listening, like that would be awesome. But at the same time, not being able to like have interaction with them on any level would be weird. I mean, I guess people could still email us, but like, what are we gonna do? Email people back?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, like, I would probably seriously consider opening up the Discord, right? Like,
right,
and make
right.
it like not patron only. And even that sounds fucking awful, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like
anybody could come in there.
Anybody could
Chris
come in there.
Chris impersonators could come in there,
pretending to be Chris, saying a bunch of stuff about their loose bowels, and we wouldn't be able to indistinguishable from the real Chris.
Yeah, and they're not loose bowels; they're rowdy bowels, and that's like a key difference that my haters just don't seem to get.
Yeah, but they've been loose before though, right? Like you and I both know.
Yes, but that's not the point. They're rowdy bowels.
Bootcut
bones over here. That's gonna be my backup name. Nobody take that.
I don't know, bro. I just don't know what's gonna happen with this Twitter thing, because there's times I genuinely enjoy interacting on Twitter, and it's not like everybody says like, oh, it's the hell site, and it can be.
It can,
and it has definitely been that way since 2016. I think since like the 2016 election started up, I think that was kind of everybody shouting to the void about how horrible everything is all the time. But with some clever filtering and some muting and like you can just have like it's just your friends kind of chatting and saying some dumb shit, and that's kind of what I want. That's it.
My muted filters, like I don't have a ton of stuff muted, and I think it's because I have a really hard time figuring out how to do it on the app anymore. Like something changed. But last time I checked, there was something to do with Trump and like the election that I had muted. I was like, I don't want any of this stuff anymore. Some other like right wing hashtag that they were using, I didn't want to see. And then Raylo.
I had Raylo.
The one ship that I could not, I just couldn't get behind. Even
I had
though
Raylo
it's canon.
Muted for a while too.
I was just, I couldn't handle it, dude. Like if I look at my list of blocked accounts, again, it's like weird right wing conspiracy theorists and Raylo shippers.
And Raylo shippers. Yeah, absolutely. I don't even have a problem with the ship, to be honest with you. Like now that
I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Man, I have been seeing some people bending over backwards. There's this weird little, man, I don't know how little it is or how weird it is. Maybe this is commonplace. There's this circle of House of the Dragon fans. And some of them are like attacking George R. R. Martin, saying he's a terrible writer. And it's like what you usually see people attacking him for is all of the like misogyny in his stories and like racism in his stories, because they don't realize that he's criticizing those things, and whether he handles it right or not is another conversation. But they're not attacking him for that. They're attacking him because like, oh, he made Damon do a bad thing and we love Damon and he's a terrible writer for doing this. I go, oh, that's wrong and interesting that you think that way. And there's just this internal conflict in this community. I was looking at it for 35 minutes the other day, just reading through all these different Twitter accounts, just at war with each other, because they feel like they have to justify their favorite characters as good people. And I just, like, if you're watching HBO's House of the Dragon, you're in the wrong place for good people. I think you and I already talked about this, but, like, that's not, you cannot argue. Like, you could argue, I guess, for, like, why Kylo Ren is, you know, misunderstood or whatever, even though he's a war criminal. But at least there's like a, it's like that's a children's movie, so there's a little bit more like give and take there. But it's like, no, everyone who has the dragon is like supposed to be kind of shitty. I don't know why you're trying to defend them. Admit that they're bad and then still enjoy it. That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most my dislike for the Reylo stuff just was I liked Rey more than I liked Kylo.
Yeah.
Like it was just
I could never get the idea out of my head of the twins from the legends, like, you know, from the expanded universe stuff, because it's Han Solo and Leia have twins, right?
Oh yeah, and Luke, because I know we've talked about this before. Luke has to go check in the womb, check in his sister's womb, to make sure those kids are okay.
Yeah,
that's the first 10 pages of the very first like Star Wars. It's,
it starts off. But when you describe it, it does sound weird, because I know we've had this conversation before as well. But I had heard you say that, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And then I read it, and it's like, "Oh, he can like feel them because they're already strong with the Force."
Yeah, he feels
them
in the womb.
But when you spell it out, it's weird as fuck.
Yeah, when you say when you put it into the sentence. It's most basic form. It's he went into his sister's room to check on her kids, and it's you. What? Excuse me.
The funniest thing about that series is that Luke Skywalker is a wife guy.
He's totally a wife guy. They keep like teasing that chick is gonna. I can't remember her name.
Mara Jade.
Mara Jade.
The one spoiler, and this is gonna be a mild character name spoiler for Andor, which I have not watched yet. But the only spoiler that I have about it is that you just said something about Mon Mothma being in the show, and I was like, they brought Mon Mothma back. Let's go.
Well, she's in the Rogue One movie, so
yeah.
I didn't think she was in the trailers. Like, I didn't think that was a spoiler.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't aware of her coming back and her name. I've known her name since I was like 10 years old for some reason. So well,
then you're like Mon Mothma. Like, I was sitting there watching this week's episode last night, and I'm not gonna spoil anything, but I'm like fucking riveted to the screen as this chick is doing an amazing performance, and I'm just like, her name is Mon Mothma. Star Wars got you fucked up, man. Like, I care about a person named Mon Mothma.
The way that I'm genuinely curious, like, what the thought process is when George Lucas created those names, or whoever it was, right? But I just feel like he was responsible for a bulk of them, at least. Because I've made up plenty of fantasy names, and sometimes it's just, like, kind of a combination of sounds, but then I'll tweak it so that maybe it sounds more like a real name, and, like, you do different things. Like, you look at enough names in your life, and you can figure out, like, the style of what you want it to create. But George Lucas is just something freaky about the way that
dude,
you come
he
up
is,
with Mon Mothma,
so freaky.
Dude. Like,
Mon Mothma, Yaddle?
Yeah, dude, Yaddle
Yoda's,
is like
Yoda's
like
cousin, Yoda's woman counterpart, like Yaddle.
Yaddle's tapped, dude.
Yaddle is fucking ridiculous with her weird little ugly braids. I swear to God, all of those. I can't remember what the name of the species is. I don't know if there's just. I know they're not called.
There is
Yodas.
None. There
is
still,
no name for the species.
It's
still
a mystery.
Yeah, but I mean, they're just all little garbage gremlins, man. It's just so fucking. Mm-hmm. They're just so fucking gross. I hate it. You watch the original, like, 1970s Star Wars, and when Luke lands on that planet and goes to meet Yoda for the first time, and he rightfully assumes Yoda is a garbage gremlin, you watch that whole scene and, like, come out of it, like, try to delete everything you know about Yoda being a badass or cool in your head, and just watch that scene, and you're like, that is an ugly fucking garbage gremlin. Like, that is a trash
monster. That's
how
Luke treats him, like he should.
Exactly, yeah. Like, if you, I was watching it, like, rewatching those movies relatively recently, and just going, like, this is just a fucking, just a weird little guy, nasty little guy. Like,
dude, he starts eating Luke's
dude.
Food and shit. He's like, dude, my fucking whole ship's in a swamp. I got 3 granola bars left and you're chowing down on one?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Why don't you go eat some raw fish, you fucking green
R2,
weirdo?
Can you fry this guy? Like, let's get out of here. Yeah. He's about to be my lunch.
Does this guy's ribs have any fat on him? Let's smoke him up.
I've
let's
eaten
eat
frogs
Yoda.
Before. Let's do this.
Let's go. Oh, dude, I just, Star Wars is so fucking weird, man. It's
Yoda in the background just like,
and then, like, Yaddle comes along, and you realize that Yoda just talks like that. Yeah. There's, that's just the
that's
way,
just a Yoda. That's a Yoda quirk.
That is an affectation. That it, that's yeah. like a white person doing AAVE, right? Like it's exactly. I mean, except he's not probably not like culturally appropriating anything. So I guess
he's
like not,
he's culture. He's probably. I feel like he's culturally appropriating Dagobah. That's his original. Because even though I know when we go back and we see the prequels, he still talks like that. Then when he was part of high society, right?
Yes.
When he was a super cop running the world. But I feel like the original intention is that he was appropriating the people of Dagobah.
I'm down with that. I'm down with that. Or if it's like a it's like when you Autumn has a friend whose father was from the UK, and a friend lived in the US her entire life, but would like put on the English accent because she like went to London maybe once every couple of years or once a year. Or something.
I would do that if I ever visited London. You'd never catch me in an American accent ever again. Dude, just watching Bake Off, and it's like, you know, it's a good that there's a diverse spread of accents on that show because people come from all over, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd be centered in on doing like a Paul Hollywood impression all the time. Because once I watch a thing too much, it just becomes like my whole thing for a little while.
Yeah. Catch me reading the Dark Tower books, and all of a sudden I'm saying thank you, Sai, like a goddamn
dude,
idiot.
That's like all we said in high school. When I look back, I'm like, we just like said that shit all
we
the
said
time.
It out loud.
Not just to each other. We said it like in class.
Like to a retail employee. I'd be like, thank you, Sai. Yeah. What the fuck?
Dude,
you were wrong for that.
It was a lot.
Like, it's too much.
We were both very young when we started reading those books. And it's like, I had that window between like ages 12 and 14 where 5, 6, and 7, those books all came out right in a row. So it was just like a whirlwind of time where I thought, this is me. I'm that guy. You know?
I do not aim with my
long
heart.
Days and pleasant nights and shit, dude. I don't aim with my gun.
I do not aim with my gun, Chris. I don't need you to know this about me right now.
I aim with my heart. Is that even the correct one?
I do not aim with my eye. I don't remember the whole speech. I don't remember everything.
I do not kill with my farts. I kill with my
This happens to me with that TV show Justified too. The guy there has such a it's just so eloquent, like written, and the language is so specific to this like Kentucky area, and it's not just. Like,
next thing you know, you're trying on Autumn's cowboy hat.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like I'm talking like a fucking like coal miner in the goddamn swells
like,
of Kentucky or whatever.
Do you think you could go around town in a cowboy hat and anyone bat an eye at you? Would that be?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I can't pull off a cowboy hat. There's like there is a certain. I don't have the number one. I don't have the rest of the outfit. So like I can't pull off like there's a dude that can pull off like blue jeans, t-shirt, cowboy hat, cowboy boots, right? I'm not that dude. I'm not gonna be able to pull that off. There's a guy that can pull off like fully buttoned up long sleeve shirt, tucked in belt with the buckle, starched jeans, cowboy boots, cowboy hat. I'm not that guy at all. Can't do that. Oh. So like, there's no place for me in a cowboy hat world. Like, it's just not ever going
to
happen.
I've tried to wear mine out. It's not really a cowboy hat, but it's like a wide brim Stetson hat. Mm-hmm. So it might as well be. I don't have the confidence. I don't even think it really looks bad whenever I wear it. Like, I wore it to the beach. Like, we're sitting out in the sun, so I just had it on my head, and that was fine. I think it blended in fine. But I just like if I wear it to a family gathering, we often have family gatherings outdoors in somebody's yard. If I show up in a hat, I'm gonna get a lot of comments about the hat, even though it's functional, even though I'm keeping the sun off my neck, you know what I mean?
God forbid you have any young cousins there, like any younger children in the area, and they are gonna bust.
I got
those
older
balls,
sisters,
bro.
And they're ripping me a new one.
Yeah dude, you're not stepping into the family function.
It's dude, it's tough
hat.
They've always been cool and I never have been, so it's like it's just tough. It's not easy. I'm always trying different stuff, dude. One time we went to Maine and on a family vacation. I think the last time we all went on a family vacation, I was probably like 15 or 16. I had a little spending money, and we stopped at this trading post, and I bought a leather cowboy hat.
Yeah, you did.
And I've never heard the end of it, because it was like $50, which when I think back on it, I'm like, a leather hat? First of all, weird. That's weird.
That's a weird.
But,
yeah, that's a
but $50 for that doesn't seem like it's a lot of money.
What's the age
think about it.
What are we talking about?
I was probably 15, 16.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, I could see that being like an impulse buy for a 15-year-old being like,
this is gonna be cool. I get in the car to be driven home by my sisters. I'm like, oh, I'm cool. I'm going to drive home with my sisters instead of mom and dad. And sibling
that's
trip, you know?
Just a long roast. I was imagining when I would could film that, put
and
it on
I
Comedy
said, oh,
Central.
Can we stop at the trading post? I wanted to look in there. And they're like, fine, make it quick. And I come back out like 15 minutes later with a leather cowboy hat. And they're like, Jesus fucking
who is
Christ,
this kid?
Chris. And this, I must have been 14 or 15, I guess, because I think it was definitely before like I would have ever dated anybody or like shown that like I could be a little bit social. So it was definitely troubling for them.
Just now that everybody is just extremely worried about you, Chris.
But they also couldn't pin me down because like that was definitely when I was getting really into emo. And I think that whole trip, I listened to nothing but this band, The Census Fail. It was just like my thing when I was 14, 15.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's that. I wouldn't ever leave my PS2 alone. I think I brought my PS2 with me.
Okay.
When we went on vacation. Uh-huh, so like uh-huh. I was probably like repping Kingdom Hearts or something. So that's troubling in that angle. And then I show up with a leather cowboy hat. Like
what are you
pick
doing?
A lane.
What are you doing?
Pick a lane.
Get yeah. out of here. I didn't.
It was three lanes and they were all troubling.
I can't imagine. I think back to the stuff I was wearing in high school and. It was just like the blandest of clothing, like just blue jeans and yeah. a shirt. Like that was, I had no sense of style. I had no sense of, I knew that I was not cool. I recognized that in the faces of the people around me, right? Like I would get off the bus and I would see, oh, just a sea of eyes looking at me going, that dude's not cool. And I recognize now, probably not true. Nobody was giving a fuck about Jeremy Greer. Like everybody was literally just going about their day. But at the time, everybody was looking at me with that look that was just intensely saying that I was not cool. And I just yeah. never managed yeah. to figure out how to buy clothes for myself. Like every once in a while, a girlfriend would be like, you should wear this shirt. It brings out your eyes. And I would be like, okay. And that would just be the shirt that I would wear anytime I was with that girl. Yeah. So that was
yeah,
it.
I used to have one shirt for, yeah. That's, yeah, Jess helped me a lot because she worked at a clothing store, so she would constantly get me clothes. And now I'm at a point where I'm trying to refigure out what I want to do with my style, which is a weird thing to feel like I'm saying. But I just want to dress comfortably, but also feel comfortable, like with the way that I look, not just mm-hmm. Like because I would wear a lot of stuff that I felt like, oh, people compliment me when I wear this, but this shirt isn't my style. I don't feel like this is my thing. Yeah. And I also don't want to just wear like video game shirts all the time because I have a ton of those because I like that stuff. But I don't only want to have, you know, shirts with the Dark Souls logo on it or whatever. Like, I just want to have some normal clothes that I feel comfortable with, that feel like I suit my style. It's tough.
I ran into this. So at the end of last year, I told Autumn, like, hey, I have like my dress code for work is like anywhere from business casual to like maybe business, right? Like that's the area I work in. And a lot of times I'm in the field with like blue collar dudes. Like I'm in a polo shirt, untucked, blue jeans, boots, like we're good. Like I'm not stressed out about that. But like when I'm mm-hmm. doing like a trade show or I'm doing a presentation in front of a city council or mayor, like I told Autumn I wanna step my game up a little bit. So I got like yeah. some button downs, we got some nicer shirts, things like that. All of that shit is just a hassle.
Yeah, it's a hassle.
It's so much more of a hassle than just throwing on the polo and then walking out the door. Yeah. And it looks good, and I get it, but then now I only have like, because I only went in a little bit, right? Like I got a couple. So then in my head, it's like, okay, those are the fancy shirts. So I never put them on unless I'm doing something quote unquote fancy. And then when I get to the fancy mm-hmm. stuff, I'm like, oh, that seems like a hassle. I'll just tuck my shirt in today. Like I'm real lazy yeah. about it. So
especially when you're not used to wearing the fancy shirt.
Yeah, and then you feel like weird and uncomfortable. Like it feels like this.
Anytime I wear khakis, because I wear jeans, I mostly wear black jeans to work. That's just kind of my I prefer a black jean. That's me. But I got plenty of blue jeans. But whenever I wear a khaki or any other kind of pant, it's not me. It's like all I'm like, everybody's looking at my balls right now. All anybody can see these pants is my balls. Which is not something that is a concern or should be. But it's just because like I'm so used to the like dark color of pants. You just don't worry about anything, right? But with those damn light colored khakis, I feel like a freak.
You feel like a freak, like it's a little tiny little manicure freak.
Yeah. Like I feel like they can see every inch of my ass in these things because they're just light, and the way that the light reflects off of my ass, which is already like got that kind of shine to it because I oil it up every morning.
Of course,
you know,
yeah, you got to oil up the ass. I mean, that's the key in like masculine, preparation, I guess.
Fellas, listen, if you're not oiling up that ass,
you
it's not going anywhere.
You got to have
you know
a proper
saying?
Skincare routine. You got to have a proper mm-hmm. ass care routine. And if your ass care doesn't start with oiling up that ass, then what are you even doing? Mm-hmm. Like you start yeah. with the oil, no matter what you're doing. Start with the oil.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But make sure you wash your hands before you go to the face because you don't want the ass oil getting into your face.
See,
oil.
I do.
Two different oils.
I do.
Those are two different oils.
I'm a face, hair, ass guy. That's my order of directions.
Face, hair,
yeah.
ass. I mean, yeah, I think I'm probably still.
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm a body, like shower first. Like, so body, yeah. face, hair, ass, and then out the door. And then
did I already tell you about the time that I used conditioner? I don't know if it was Jess's or whatever. I used conditioner on my whole body thinking it was body wash. I'm like slick as hell. And I'm like, what is happening?
Going
like,
on?
This is not.
Why am
and
I so
turned
smooth?
The bottle around and it's like, it's like conditioner. I was like, fuck.
Oh.
I used a ton of it too.
It's probably really expensive.
You don't need to use a ton of it, but.
That's really funny.
Oh, I have used the expression slicker than a goddamn mermaid a number of times, and that's exactly how I felt. I felt like a dolphin in that shower.
Just laying down, just honking.
Yeah, and I couldn't get it off, dude. Then I'm standing in the shower for 15 minutes trying to get all the fucking conditioner off my ass.
Why would you try to get it off? You just strut into the world with that, baby. You just get, you just go.
It wasn't, it's not leave, it wasn't leave-in conditioner. That was the trouble.
Oh, that's the dumbest joke you've said in a long time.
Yeah. It really happened, though.
It's very funny.
Did cover my body. Lathered up. All right, should we talk about this awful episode of Merlin?
We should, yes.
Okay.
And it's all